Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Talking to you about things to help you lead a more positively minded life. The better you understand yourself and other people, I believe the better your mind. Now, the better your attitude. Attitude. What an important thing nowadays. Everywhere you go, you hear people talking about some recent events. Here's an event for you. In China yesterday, a Chinese bride burned her new husband to death because he got into bed without washing his feet. Yep, it really happened. They got married on February 2nd, but they were always arguing about who was right and who was wrong. That's the topic of our show today, right and wrong. And as a result, one night he came home, and he got into bed without putting on his, without washing his feet. So she set fire to his mattress, where he subsequently died. So, of course, you know, people are talking about, was she right to do it or wrong to do it? You know, my husband refuses to clean his feet before he gets into bed. What's the matter with him? Well, this issue of right and wrong, it comes to me frequently because as a couples therapist, which I am, I usually see people coming to me saying, tell my husband that he's wrong, or tell my wife that she's wrong. As if I'm the judge of what's right and wrong. I remember as a 17-year-old kid, I used to travel the subways back and forth carrying Nietzsche's book, Beyond Good and Evil. And I remember the book. I remember it had so many questions because I grew up in a Catholic world. And it questioned all of the morality of Christianity. It questioned it. Nietzsche was a strong, he was an opponent to Adolf Hitler. He was, you know, he had some very good questions that he was asking. And he was mainly asking about what we believe and why we believe it. Wrote another book, The Genealogy of Morals, I remember. And it was a question that was in my mind. What is good? What is bad? What is right? What is wrong? How do we determine it? Well, we're finding out so much stuff about it that it gets really more and more difficult to make a moral judgment. Or I think it should get more and more difficult to make a moral judgment. Let's start off with the concept of morality. I want to use as a concept, I'm going to use some Freudian concepts. Freudian because he had a good idea. He divided the mind into what he called the id, the ego, and the superego. And his was his idea. The id was your basic impulses, the animal you. I want what I want when I want it, and I've got to have it. So you feed your id, I-D. I wonder where he got the word id from, you know? If you feed your id when you're just in letting yourself go. But he said the id is basically part of the infant. It's part of the child. A child is almost all id. Now, somewhere along the line, the child develops a superego. Now, a superego, as you can sound, it sounds like, you know, superego, is the part of you that learns what is right and wrong. Maybe right and wrong for you, maybe right and wrong for the world. So you're taught. Where do you get these ideas? Well, your church teaches you, your school teaches you, your parents teach you, and they give you messages. You know, don't hit your brother. You shouldn't be selfish. And whatever this morality is, they kind of give you messages. Plus, they demonstrate this to each other. They demonstrate fairness. They demonstrate generosity. And you learn all of these things. Now, the superego, supposedly, is something you develop from learning about this stuff, what's right and wrong. And according to Freud, it's kind of learned. See, so the superego is the part of you that tells the id when it shouldn't take care of itself. So this battle goes on between the superego and the id. Then comes the ego. The ego, according to Freud, was self, but also considered to be the balancing force between the superego, the should or should not part of you, and the id, the I want part of you. So we heard of id, ego, superego. Sometimes people don't have any superego. So their ego, their self, is based on just the id. That means I feed all my passions, I eat what I want to eat, I screw what I want to screw, I take what I want to take. According to Freud, the absence of the superego is the psychopath. That's what the psychopath is. They have no superego. There is no right wrong. It's just not there. It was like taken out of the brain. He talked about another thing. He talked about a thing when people have a superego and an ego only, but they have no id. Now, you've met people like that. They have no passions. They're passionless. They're always walking around doing the right thing only, and they have no passions. Funny thing about those people is usually they have some kind of strange sexuality off on the side. Like strong superego ego people would be people like the clergy. Like people who are preaching all the time, perfectionists, combination of, you know, my ego, myself, is about my superego, about my knowing what's right. And I only do what's right, and I never do what's wrong, and I clean up all the imperfections, and I never feed my id. Those things are no good and they're bad. Now, of course, if you do that, it leaks out of you. But so when a person, we said at the beginning, the person who has the id connected to the ego but has no superego is a psychopath, the killer, the person with no guilt. Then you could have the person who is all ego, superego. So they have no child. They have no passions. You know, you're probably married to somebody like that. And then we have this final one, which is called the superego id with no ego. Now, what does that mean? That means you're like a multiple personality. That means half the time you're good and half the time you're bad. Half the time you're out there arresting people. The rest of the time you're out there visiting prostitutes. You know? It's almost like two sides of a coin with nothing in the middle. But of course this is not true of what we've been hearing, because with people like this, they really seem wacky. You know, they don't seem like they're getting by. So this is one way of looking at morality. And the ways that I say that it looks at morality is, remember, according to Freud, the superego part of us is the development of the morality. Another way of looking at it, Eric Byrne, let me look at this one with you. He talked about having a child, a parent, and an adult, right? Just pick your child. Now, if you could play with me, and if you're sitting around, you have a pencil in your hand, draw three circles under each other, one under the other. Just draw three circles, right? I know if you're driving your car, you can't do it. So look at the stoplight. See? The light has red on the top and yellow in the middle and green on the bottom. So there's your three circles. He said we have these three circles. The bottom circle is the child part of us. The middle circle is the adult part of us, and the top part is the parent part of us. The parent knows what's good and bad, just like Freud's superego. The child is where all our impulses is, just like what we talked about with the id. The adult, according to Eric Byrne, is the part of us that negotiates in the middle. However, he goes on to take the parental part of us, and he breaks it into two parts, the nurturing parent and the critical parent. You see, the critical parent is the part that's out there criticizing you all the time, telling you you're bad, and criticizing other people. You have a critical parent part of you. You got one everybody does. Nasty. It's like a nasty parent. You know, like you're mean to people sometimes. It's like you just judge people. And then he talks about the nurturing parent, which is the part of you that cares about people so much in a nurturing way. It's more maternal. That no matter what people do, you see them without judgment. You feel, even though you may not agree with their doing, you feel a compassion for their pain and their conflict. The nurturing parent. Armand DeMille here with you, trying to describe the origin of morality according to some new information that we've discovered and some old information that might be helpful for you. Let's stop down to that it again, where all the fun is. The id, the child part of you. There's two kinds of child. There's the okay child, the child who's loving and happy and curious. And there's the not okay child. The not okay child in you, and every one of you probably have it, is mean, it's reactive, it's rebellious. Where do we get our not okay child from? We get it from the critical parent. When somebody is a critical parent to you, you could be okay at the beginning, but after a while, you're not okay. And that not okay part of you becomes either compliant, which is what a not okay child does. Yes, mommy, I'll do whatever you say. Or rebellious. I won't do anything you say. The not okay child of people makes them act out. It makes them do things that look like it's the opposite of who they are. So if you had a strong critical parent part of you, you most likely have a strong not okay child part of you. And this is why you'll see people who are the most severe judges of people very often showing some part of them that is just the very part that they hate the most or they've been making war against. Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. We will take more questions later in the show. But there's more to it, and I think it's fascinating. Morality. You think morality always comes from what we've learned? You think it's all from what we've been taught? I wish it were, but it gets confusing. Because the VMPFC comes in here, and you know the old VMPFC, because each week I have a new word for you. And here it is, the VMPFC. You could blame it. It's the part of you that you didn't even know about. It stands for the ventromedial prefrontal cortex. The VMPFC. Get this word, ventromedial prefrontal cortex. VMPFC. Cash Cab may come along and ask you that question. All right. In the past decade or so, scientists have been examining what happens to the brain when we get caught with moral and ethical decisions. But now we have this new science called neuroscience. And what it helps you do is make a picture of the brain when things are going on. Where's the activity? Very interesting. A recent paper in Nature examined the question by comparing moral judgments made by neurologically normal people, but compared to people who made moral judgments who had damage in this area, which is called the VMPFC. Prefrontal teeth that have damage there, it's in the front of your head, you know. The study found that people with VMPFC damage, this is prefrontal damage, were more likely to make utilitarian choices and moral dilemmas, judgments that favored the good of all as opposed to the good of just yourself. That's a strange thing. One would think it would be the opposite. One would think it would be impaired. Here's one of the tests they ask you. They said, is it okay to push a man in front of a moving train if you knew the result of throwing him in front of that train would save five people down further down the track? Right? That's a common test question. Think about it. What would you say? If you saw five children on one end of a track, and there was this big, bulky guy, and you knew if you, and the train was out of control, you knew if you threw him in front of the train, it'd save the five children off on the right, what would you do? There's a moral dilemma. Well, what would you do? What would you do? Well, people who had VM PFC damage said it's okay. Push him in front of the train. You got to save, you got to do what's good for everybody. People who had less damage, they said, no, it's not okay. Those responses concurred with recent research indicating that VMPFC plays an important role in pro-social sentiments such as guilt, compassion, and empathy, the lack of which makes it easier to make utilitarian judgments that might otherwise feel abhorrent. You know, so if you're going to make a utilitarian judgment, like a kind of judgment that would be for everybody, they say if you have damage in that area of your brain or if you have less activity in that part of your brain, you're more likely to make a judgment like pressing a button to blow up Hiroshima to save the war, to end the war. They're saying people who have low PFC or low VMPFC are more likely to push the button. And they would have saved millions of lives. You know, they did save millions of lives. And they cost millions of lives. I mean, Albert Einstein, whose birthday is coming up on Friday, by the way, you should know, it's called Pi Day. He had such a moral dilemma about this. He wondered. He knew what he was unleashing. He asked the question. He said, it was August 2nd, 1939. As the specter of the Second World War loomed, Albert Einstein wrote Franklin Delano Roosevelt that he knew he could affect the war and the future of mankind. He said he called for watchfulness, he said, and if necessary, quick action. He knew that if he released this bomb, it would end the war. And he had a tremendous moral dilemma, knowing that he would kill many, many people, or that it would kill many people but save many, many more. Difficult choice. Well, okay, so what makes people have this utilitarian choice, judgment, which I believe many soldiers and generals very often have? They have something that says to them, it's okay. We can sacrifice 200 soldiers to win this war. Now, if you're a general, you have to do that. Okay, so I'm a pacifist. Are you a pacifist? There should be no war. So what would you have done in World War II? Right? What would you have done? What if we had an invasion force come off? It was likely. It could have possibly happened. Don't fight. Do fight. You have to make a choice somewhere. You know, and if you're a leader, you have to make some kind of utilitarian choice at some time. You know, but are you capable of it? Well, they found certain things. And this is a very important thing, because if you look at the faces of people who commit or who get caught at crimes, you sometimes see it. It's called blunted affect. Now, what is blunted affect? Blunted affect is that your emotions are kind of numb. And they found that people who had damage to the VMPFC or low functioning in the ventro, boy, I already lost it, right? In the ventro, oh, what are you doing? I'm going to find it. Ventromedial prefrontal cortex. Let's write that up and keep it on our wall for a while. People who had low activity there also had blunted affect. Now, blunted affect is you don't feel much. You don't feel much guilt, you don't feel much sadness, you don't feel much shame, you don't feel much love. You just don't feel much. Well, of course, if you're a general, in the Army. Thank you, Jana. Jana, who's assisting me today. If you are a general in an army, or if you're somebody, you know, you get blunted affect. You get cut. If you're a cop, you get blunted affect. You know, I look at some of these TV shows like CSI, and they walk in and five people are dead. And, oh, yeah, how are you? Yes, good. Here's some coffee. You know, and they're all carrying Starbucks coffee or something else. You know, a commercial for Coke or something. And they're walking in to look at dead bodies everywhere. Oh, yeah. Oh, I really feel bad about this one. He was only 15. The others, they were grown up. I don't care about them. Kind of silly shows. Because even as you watch these shows, you develop the blunted affect for murder. For, you know, that kind of killing. I'm not saying you shouldn't watch the shows. But blunting your affect. You know, when you're tired and you're going to bed at night and you're going to sleep at night and you're watching murder pictures, it's easy because you're sleepy. You know, your affect is blunted. You get kind of nodding out. Other times you may not like to see it. So they did some overall work and they found that the people who had the blunted affect were more likely to not feel guilt when they had to make these decisions, and they made some decisions that were just based on chemical imbalances. So here comes the big question now. When we judge somebody who we see has a blunted affect, blunted, they don't seem to have many feelings, like some of our government people. You look at them and they look numb. I wouldn't even say the head guy, because he doesn't look too numb. He looks like he's filled with all kinds of feelings. But I'm talking about some of the other people who you don't see any feelings in. You know, and you look at you look at him and you wonder, ooh, it's like a zombie. A zombie is more likely to make a utilitarian decision, a decision of what they think is good for mankind or the social order, without considering the effect on one person and how it feels on that one particular person or the person next door. These are the ones that we watch for. Now, when we see it, though, do we get angry? What do? Do we shout at these people? Do we say, hey, you blunted affect, you? Mr. Blunt, come over here and take your dues. Well, you see, there's something wrong. When you look at somebody who is blunt, who is kind of numb, you know in your mind that you should not trust them with your children. Know that, because they may make a decision that is not going to be for your immediate child, but may be good for the environment. If you want your kid protected, don't give them to somebody with blunted affect. Right? On the other hand, somebody with blunted affect lives a kind of empty life. It's really a kind of a sad, pathetic life. They drive ahead and they move ahead and they spend their time doing things and they just can't. Life has no meaning. I mean, no real meaning. What are you achieving? You're going to have a park named after you when you die? You know, we'll call it the Spitzer Park. You know, what are you going to do? What do you achieve? What's it all about? So what you do is you look to unblunt your affect. And how do you unblunt affect? You look for thrill. You look for excitement. You look for a charge. You look for danger. You look for something. Somebody make me feel something is what you beg for. You look to get unblunted. So I feel just as sad for the people who have blunted affect as I do for the people who are their victims. It seems like there's just a loss, you know, there's a loss in the mind. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm talking to you about good and evil. Beyond good and evil, morality, moral judgment, and I'm going to take your calls when we get back from our break. I want you to know that people who are idealists, who could be wise and civilized, and they could be scholarly, erudite, maintain a dispassionate philosophical stance, they focus on long-range concerns, the big picture, It's okay. It's okay, but there cannot be the absence of emotion. You need to have the feelings there. You need to be able to, because I think feelings, emotions, are what connects us to each other. It's what makes me be fair with you. It's what made me chase after somebody after I found a bill on the floor that I thought was theirs. You know, it's what makes me say, you have to do it. It's right. You can't just take something, you know, that's dropped in front of you. You can't just hurt somebody. You can't just stand in front of somebody online. You have to be considerate of the other people. Well, that's one. That's me on my small level. On a bigger level, if it meant jumping in front of the line, meant I was going to save 20 people from disaster, I'll jump in front of the line. But I want to have both. I want to have both the blunted affect when I need it and the non-blunting, the emotional side of me, most of the time. It's finding that balance that is very difficult. So, my friends, as you go through life, looking to see who you could throw rocks at and who you could judge and who you could give an opinion about, keep in mind that the people who are the victims of the worst dualities, you know, the worst conflicts, the people who you never expected, the priest who fooled around with a little boy, the governor who did the crime, or the one who got ostracized for one or another reason, there's a part of you that is dying to criticize them and dying to judge them because you want them to be punished. Why? Because there's a part of that inside you. Every one of us have a morality, and we have our id. We have this other part of us that wants to just live it out, you know, and say, well, I don't want to be so moral. I want to just live the wild life. And when we see somebody living a wild life, we want to punish them because we don't want to know they exist. So every time we move into a judgment, which I'm not saying we shouldn't do, I'm just saying that when we do it and and as you walk, a friend of mine was taking a train home the other night and heard all of the construction workers talking about what should be done. He should quit. He shouldn't quit. He should have done it. He shouldn't have done it. He shouldn't have gotten caught. This thing that's going back and forth, they're talking about themselves. And if you listen with a discerning ear, the people with the judgment are talking about themselves. But, of course, you don't listen with a discerning ear because part of you wants to take the pebbles out of your pocket and throw them at somebody, too. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll take your phone numbers at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. In fact, I have some music for you. I hope you get the humor of it. We're going to take a short break. I'll be right back. Now, by now, do you get the idea? Why do we play this particular theme in the middle? This is the theme to the movie The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And we're talking about good and bad, so it's Nietzsche's tune. Friedrich's probably rolling over in his grave. This is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Here in New York, I've been talking to you about morality. Morality and judgment and what it is and where it comes from and where it comes from in us and what we're learning from neuroscience about the VMPFC and about parts of our brains that make certain people have more judgment. I mean, the other day we found out there was a part of our brain that correlates with hoarding. They found out that people who hoard have more activity in one part of it, have no activity in a certain little part of their brain. So they gave them a little chemical that gave them more activity in that part of their brain, and they stopped hoarding. You know, I mean, science is amazing. What we're learning is amazing, and we may not be learning the right thing. I mean, this may be like genetics. You know, there are certain places where genetics are saving the world. I mean, really, truly mean genetically engineered rice is feeding millions of people. But we know we're going to make a mistake in here. We know one day we're going to wind up with some kind of Godzilla who's going to grow out of this genetically engineered rice. We know it's going to happen. But how do you oppose it? How do you stop it? How do you stop trying to figure out what's the utilitarian decision, you know? Should you push the button on the bomb or not? Who deals with that conflict, you know? Who deals with it? Are they good people, not good people? What would you do? There was one question they asked. Oh, it was a really interesting question. If you could have your mate assaulted by someone else because they were, if your mate was threatening to leave you and you knew if you hired somebody to assault them, to hurt them, that you would be able to comfort them and they would feel more close to you. Would it be okay to do that? Well, you'd be amazed how many people thought it was an okay thing to do. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209-2900. We're going to take some of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. It's Jim from Long Island. How are you?
Hello, Jim. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
From Long Island, Long Island.
That's one and only.
From 7-Eleven, Long Island.
That's right.
Hey,
CVS,
Jim.
Long Island.
How are you?
Good. Says, you know, well, you know, my part-time job is I'm a bartender. And, you know, so that was the main topic of discussion, obviously, last night and the last 2 days. But I'm just trying to figure out, you know, such a crazy reaction from it. I just don't know if people, it's, you know, it seems like they just, either they really relish in the fact that he got caught, or if they're genuinely hurt. Because he had such a, seemed like he had such a, you know, such a pure reputation for being someone who was, you know, kind of like, you know, Elliot Ness, untouchable. So what is your interpretation on it?
Well, I think you bring up a good point. I think you're saying, you know, maybe the reason that people felt so judgmental was because they were hurt. That they had a good daddy, you know, but let's think about what happened to Nixon. You know, Nixon, it took people forever to judge Nixon, right? And Nixon was found out, and those who thought he was a good daddy, they stuck with him, and they stuck with him, and they stuck with him. Like many people stick with their, with political parties, you know, no matter what they do, and no matter how wrong they are, and no matter how much they've lied. I mean, if we found out that part of the reason we went into Iraq was a lie, did it automatically make those same people who supported the supporters of the war angry? No. So something unusual happened here. Something unusual happened. There was a betrayal that was a sexual betrayal. Is that as bad as, you know, killing a few million people for a lie? You know, what was it? And I think, Jim, what you're seeing is people judging themselves. If you hang around the bar and you really listen, you'd hear that these men are in some way, I'm assuming they were men, I'm sure they were men and women, that the judgment was really about themselves. That they were, and it was just they had a target. Give somebody a target, and they will pin themselves. It's like pinning the tail on the donkey. They will be the donkey. See, and they'll pin their own tail on it. It's like they are criticizing themselves. So listen with your other ear next time you're there. As you hear it, are you going to be working tonight?
Friday.
Okay, on Friday it still should be a conversation. When you listen on Friday, listen to that. Listen to people talking about themselves and their own morality. Does that make sense to you?
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, great. Nice to talk to you again, Jim.
My pleasure as always. Thank you.
See you, sure.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900 is our number here. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Armand. Well, for me, you know, what you just said all about utilitarianism, to me, it's very good news because for me, it was never a dilemma that the question about is it right to push the button in order to save you kill one person, you save 10. To me, obviously, you cannot kill one innocent human being in order to save others. It was never even I never had to like think twice about it. So the good news is there's nothing wrong with my brain. But the bad news is, you know, how about all these, the term collateral damage, all these people who think that, you know, they signed up after 9/11, let's go drop bombs on Iraq or Afghanistan, and if innocent people die, oh, well, it's collateral damage. To me, that's part of that utilitarian mindset that I think we're taught it.
Yes, I hear what you're saying, but I have to ask you, let me ask you this question. If you knew that you had two people laying in a hospital, one had a chance of living, and the other didn't have a chance of living, and you had one pint of blood that was needed by the one who had a chance of living that was doing no good to the one who was going to die anyway. Would you pull it out of the arm of the one who was going to die? They'll die sooner because you take the blood away.
Well, eventually we're all going to die, but you can't go around, you know, saying, well, I mean, by that logic, you could round people up off the street and say, oh, we want to test out some new drug that might save, you know, every cancer patient, you know, from here on in. On the other hand, it might kill you. Well, you
so
just can't do
judgment,
that.
Your judgment is you just can't do it. There is no such thing as hurting any single human.
Absolutely. You cannot deliberately.
No matter how much good it is for anybody.
What?
No matter how good the greater good.
Right. You can't take an innocent life. And I would even extend it now, you know, the more I think about it, to even animals. If animals feel pain the same as us, you cannot cannot hurt an animal, even if that might mean, you know, saving people. If they feel pain, they have a nervous system, like you talk about, just like us, then you can also not hurt not only a human being. You can never do that. You cannot hurt an animal, even though it's going to save, you know, countless lives. But to tell you the truth, I've always been against legalized abortion on the same ground. You can't take one innocent life in order to make life better for others. And I've gotten a lot of flack from so-called progressive people, but I stand by that. But I also stand by that, you know, with the these people signing up after 9/11, you know, they're supposed to be our heroes because they think it's okay to go drop bombs on people, and they just label it collateral damage. To me, they are unethical.
I hear. Well, thank you very much. May I ask you one question?
Yes.
Do you like a neat house, or do you like your house to be messy?
Wait, do I like what?
A neat house.
Hold on. Do I like what?
Your house to be very neat.
I can't hear that last word.
Neat, N-E-A-T.
Well, to tell you the truth, I do eat meat, but I'm not going to justify it. I'm not going to say it's right and make excuses. I hope one day to, you know, wean myself off of it, so to speak. But I know that it is absolutely wrong, you know. Well,
thank you.
All
thank
right. You. Okay. Bye.
What a way to get an answer. 212-209. 2900, that was wonderful. Did you see how transformative that was? That was great. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille, let's take it, because I love to listen. I hope you listen, my friends. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, how are you?
Hello, I'm fine. Who are you?
I'm Antonio from the Bronx.
Hello, Antonio.
You know, I think this why, well, I could see why you as a doctor would try to rationalize this, but I think this is just a case of someone not being sincere. You know, right. I mean, this is what men do sometimes, you know, and it's unfortunate that no one is questioning why those poor women had to sell their bodies for whatever reason. I mean, that should be the real question. You know, I mean, these rich men who fall into this category, his family is basically a rich oligarchy. I mean, you know, he's going to be unscathed from this whole thing. It's, you know, it was all about forms and fashions, you know, with power. But, you know, these poor women, that's what I'm thinking about. Does anyone pay any attention to
Let me ask you something, Antonio.
Yes.
So you're saying, hey, wait a minute. This is just simple. The guy was being greedy and he made a greedy choice.
Well, I'm saying he was totally immoral also.
And he was totally immoral. Now, let me ask you, because this is, you know the show, you know the program.
Yes, sir.
Antonio, do you ever get into a moral dilemma? Do you ever have that dilemma? Do you
No.
ever feel like, you know, if you're tempted by something, by drugs, alcohol, sex, or something like that, do you ever feel that moral dilemma, or to you, is it always very clear?
Things are pretty clear with me as far as the things that, you know, I haven't been approached by anything new that has tempted me to that degree. I see beautiful women all the time. They're beautiful women. That doesn't mean I have to have them.
So,
you know.
So do you have anybody? I mean, do you have a mate?
Yes, I do.
Okay, now, and do you ever feel this kind of temptation where you talk to your mate about it? I was tempted and I have to deal with this, or you don't feel the temptation?
I don't feel that kind of temptation because when I see other women, I see them as my sisters or my aunts or mothers or, you know, what have you. I don't see them in a sexual capacity.
See, you're a very moral man. You're a moral man. You
Well, I wouldn't say that. Hold on. let me say this.
No, you're
not. I know
that
I wouldn't say that I'm a very moral man in the aspect of, you know, in the global aspect, because there are some things that I just simply don't agree with that other people feel are moral. Like
Antonio, could you get a little closer to your phone or pick up your phone or something?
Sure. One second.
Yeah, because I think I'm on a speakerphone. And I think I'm talking to God or something.
I was actually on a headset. I'm sorry.
Oh, good. Better.
Is this better?
Yeah. So, Antonio, yes, you were talking about your moral dilemmas, and no, you don't consider yourself a moral man. So let me ask you the big question.
No. Let me say this. I don't consider myself immoral. Let me put it
right that
way. Because I think that people's views of morality, their definitions, it will differ from, you know, person to person. Now, I don't want to form, because like I said, I have some views on homosexuality that may not be in line with what other people may feel, and I have been called immoral for my views on it.
Immoral?
Yes.
And what are your views?
Well, we're not discussing homosexuality right now.
Well,
we're
because
discussing...
it's kind of interesting, because it's an interesting question since you seem to get into trouble for talking about it.
I think it's a problem? I think it's unnatural.
You have a judgment about homosexuality as being unnatural. You think and you think that somebody who is married shouldn't go outside of their marriage. So I wanted to ask you this one question.
Yes, sir.
If you were passing by and a parking meter fell to the ground and it splashed all of its quarters on the floor, what would you do?
I wouldn't take any of the quarters because that's
wrong.
You'd
leave them all there?
Absolutely.
Just leave them on the floor.
Well, I wouldn't take them myself, but depending on what the situation was, maybe I had time to stop a policeman or, you know, something like that.
But you wouldn't think of picking them up and keeping them for your next time you have to.
Oh, no, absolutely not. They're not
absolutely
mine.
Absolutely not. And the same thing with homosexuality. You wouldn't go near that with anything. That's absolutely wrong.
Yeah, in my eyes, yes.
I understand. The sexual stuff for you is big stuff. You know, it's like where people really get tested, it seems, around sexuality.
That's the good part about it. I mean, you know, I've been tested on plenty of occasions, and thank God for that, because, you know, I think that that's how you really tell what your position are. You can say all these things as much as you like until you come to that point where you have to choose. You know, you're at that fork in the road. But I think that sexual conduct seems to be one of the most prevalent issues that face our society today in one sense or another. And it always seems to be at the root of the, not even money is at the root. It seems that sex is at the root of every major issue that comes along on the news or what have you. And it's just sad to see that people are, you know, have fallen, have debased themselves to this degree where everything is about sex. Sometimes I listen to your show and I disagree a lot on certain things that you mention in reference to sex. I just don't place that much of an emphasis on it.
Well, except that you disagree with a lot of sexual activities. You put a lot of emphasis on it. You know, I mean, you disagree strongly with homosexuality. You must disagree with abortion. You know?
Absolutely, I do.
You disagree with anybody going to a
hospital. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you have very strong opinions, so it seems like your mind is very preoccupied with sex. Even though you don't think about it in a lascivious way, like, I gotta have it. You think about, they shouldn't have it. So it's a preoccupation, like, the rest of the people are preoccupied just on the other side. Well, I respect your opinion, Antonio, you know? Thank you for calling in.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. Yeah, he's right. We talk too much about sex. Why sex? Why? I mean, why stupid sex? I mean, sure, it could be about money. It could be about thievery. It could be about something. You know, WBAI, the radio station that we're talking from, we don't talk much about sex. We talk about politics. We talk about what's right and what's wrong. We talk about fairness. We talk about rights. We do very little stuff about sex itself. But people, if you want to turn people on, if you want to have a radio program that attracts people, put the word sex in there. People will come running. You should pardon the expression. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Thank you. My name is Carmen, and I'd like to comment on the last call, but especially the topic of sexuality. Sexuality is one of my favorite topics. We are sexual beings, and to have a healthy sexuality, I believe, is very important. I'm not from this country, but I am a parent, and I guess I'm calling as a parent because giving the statistics of sexually transmitted disease and
the one that just came out yesterday,
one in four teenagers
have sexually transmitted diseases.
Yes, and I guess I'm calling as a parent that, I mean, I haven't been following very much the media except for this recent resignation of the governor, but no one has been talking about the street children, the street daughters of the governor who are going to be exposed to all this this attention about his own, their father's sexuality. But I don't know, I'm getting very nervous about talking over the air, but
Carmen, I fully understand about being nervous. Let me ask you a question about your own sexuality, since it's always good to call in a radio program like mine where you're sure somebody's going to ask you a question. Where are you from, Colombia?
No. I'm from Italy.
From Italy?
From Italy, and I have a very good experience about sexuality, meaning that I did, at my time when I was younger, approach sexuality, sex, for affection, for love, not for curiosity or associated to money, to politics, to power, to drugs, or something negative that I oftentimes see here. And that is my problem as a parent, to explain. Of course, I bring myself and my experience and my culture as much as I can with my children. I have two girls.
Go back a little bit. If you're so concerned about your three children, the children that you have and the teenagers you have, you're concerned about them.
Yes.
Yet you believe you have a healthy sexuality. Yet you want to teach them a healthy sexuality. Yet their father, the father of the person who's in the news, you're worried about those teenagers.
Yes.
So a little earlier I said everybody who seems to be worried about something seems to be worried about themselves. Are you worried about your own daughters and how they're doing sexually?
Yes.
Tell me what the problem is.
Yes, because I live here in this society.
Is the problem that they're having sex and you don't know what to do about it? You don't know? You get worried they're going to get diseases? What is the problem?
Yes, that sooner or later they are exposed. But the things that concern me the most is not my input into that, because I believe I had a healthy, positive experience about it. And
so whose input into your daughters do you worry about?
Well, the media, the surroundings. Like I said, the other day my 13-year-old showed me a video which we tried to curtail, and I'm not a highly moralistic person. I don't like to consider myself a highly moral person, but I have to curtail, like, videos or internet access and all these things, because it is everywhere indiscriminately, but it is not taught in school as a subject matter. Sexuality is, we are sexual beings. It is not taught by a psychologist, a doctor, medical doctor, a social worker to the student as part of our growing up. It is not that we are not educated on what it is a healthy sexuality.
Educate your children on what healthy sexuality is? Don't you tell them?
I do, but the surrounding, I'm only one person, my husband and I and I'm surrounded with the media. Like I said, my daughter showed me a video of a group, two women singer, where there is one woman that prostitutes herself, and at the end, during the video, she gets raped. Then she blows the brains out of the person that raped her, a man. I mean, and then she reconvened with her mate, which means she's gay. Nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying it's just the negativity against men, against sexuality. Every time I look at something, the subliminal message is negative.
You know, I'll tell you something, though, Carmen. We have a series of CDs we did called The Evolution of Sex. I did it with Roberta Maria Anzi, and it was probably the best education on sex I ever heard in my life.
It should be in schools or in libraries.
We should get it into the schools. You get in touch with me, and you tell me where the school is, and I'll send it over, or you could get your hands on it.
I'll be glad to.
Okay, well, listen, it's nice to talk to you. I'm going to have to play you some music just for you. This should bring you back a little bit. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you all tomorrow at 1 p.m. What will I be doing back at 1 p.m.? Oh, I don't know. We'll talk about something else. And here's something from Italy from a while back for Carmen. And my love and respect to all of you. If you want to get a copy of today's show, you can get it on the Internet through WBAI.org, or you could go to my website, thepositivemind.com. See you tomorrow. Sort of big comment.